Hey guys, I hope you're doing well after a very tense election day. As I record, numbers are still coming in, so I hope everyone is happy and healthy. Anyway, we are rounding out and returning to our Vampire Month. As the frost of November seeps in, so please enjoy this late addition to Dracula, I guess Bram Stoker's Dracula, as we go into the family months of November, December, and January. I appreciate all the things that you've done, all the listening you're doing, and everything you do to help keep us afloat. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Letterboxd, and please, please, please rate and review us on Apple. Thanks, guys.
Good morning, and welcome to an episode of Myopia Mornings. Oh, wait, what? Myopia Movies, hey! this week, we learn who is worse to watch. An American doing an English accent or an Englishman doing a Romanian accent. I'm host Nick Hoffman, and on panel today, we've got...
Hello, this is Daniel, and I want to suck your blood.
And I'm Charlie Rose. I'm a vampire expert.
There he is.
And I am Matthew W. Quinn, the Count of Marietta.
You know what? Fine. We're gonna go with that. That's officially his designation now.
Count of Marietta.
Oh, God.
That means Nick must do me homage.
First of all, you don't even live here. Second, Matt Quinn is not a local guy. He's running from Senate from another state. He's probably funded from Al Jazeera. Hopefully, when this comes out, the election will be over. Blissfully. Blissfully.
All voted, right?
Everyone voted. Yeah, everyone,
yes,
who listens.
Everyone.
Everyone who listens better vote unless you're under 18. Then you should vote for your parents. We've seen fake mustaches and trench coats. You can do it.
I'm Mr. Hoffman.
There's quite a few, I think, local people registered as Vincent Adultman in Fulton County.
So we did Bram Stoker's Dracula, which is a Francis Ford Coppola movie from 1992. It is a honest retelling.
He still needed the money. He was bankrupt for like 15 years.
That's right. This opened a vineyard. Is Sophia hidden in this movie somewhere? I didn't notice.
I don't think she's in this one. Like she was hidden in the first Godfather movie.
And in the third Godfather movie.
Well, she wasn't hidden, unfortunately.
I just wondered if one of the women off screen who's like vaguely seductive. I know one of them is Monica Bellucci, but I was like wondering if the rest of them, like one of them was just Sofia Coppola.
His daughter a vampire bride.
No, God, that would have been even worse casting decision than Godfather 3.
Well, Godfather 3 is a whole other thing. It'll never be an episode, but it's a whole other thing. I will say we can do a plot synopsis of this one, but it's literally just the book Dracula. Like, there's not a lot to it.
With a little tacked on.
Yes. So, Charlie, you want to take it?
Sure, why not?
This is kind of where we should have almost started the month with your bread and butter, but, you know, we're here.
Well, finishing it out this way is pretty good. So, basically, the movie starts out giving you some background on Dracula himself, the man, Vlad the Impaler. And it sort of creates a story of how he lost this great love. And because he lost this great love, he felt betrayed by God and therefore cursed God, who cursed him. And that's how he became a vampire. It set up how he became a vampire. It set up his motivation through the rest of the movie. And that is to reconnect with his lost love.
Right.
The rest of the movie is sort of a following of the Dracula story with this love, this romance tacked on because Harkness is... when she marries Jonathan Harker, she becomes Mina Harker.
Right, okay. She's Harkness to begin with.
She's Harkness to begin with, yeah. Mina Harkness is...
I think it's Murray.
Murray?
Yeah.
Mina Murray?
Mina Murray.
You're right.
Wilhelmina Murray.
Yes.
According to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Matt is correct.
Oh my gosh, you're right. So basically, she is supposed to be the reincarnated love of Dracula that he lost.
Who, by the way, the only reason, sorry to cut in here, Charlie, the only reason he lost her is because she got a note saying, Dracula had died in battle when he hadn't, and so she flung herself herself out of a window.
Dude, this movie opens with the Cliff's Note version of Romeo and Juliet. Yeah, something it does. Fierce.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And although probably the most poorly timed lecture on the morals of suicide from the priests.
Although I will say this much, the Dracula version is way more metal than Romeo ever was.
Dude, this movie hugs that line pretty tightly, and I kind of dig it for that. This movie has more beheadings than you'd expect from Victorian literature.
Well, Romeo is a fop. Vlad the Impaler comes out in armor with looks like a flayed man and a wolf's head.
True. I mean, yes.
That's metal AF.
That armor, it looked like he had no skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
apparently that armor is currently displayed in one of Coppola's vineyards. Just throwing that out there.
Well, there you go. Bonus if you go check out some
more of their red wines.
I don't know.
I just, whenever he comes on screen, I just think of the Simpsons joke with Krusty the Clown. He's just like, "Tonight I'm going to suck your blood."
Yes. And just like... Speaking of which, because they parodied this directly, who is a better Dracula, Gary Oldman or Mr. Burns?
I will say it depends on the scene. I don't know if he could have pulled off that like
young, sexy Dracula.
Okay, that's...
dude, and that sex scene with him and like a Winona Ryder, which goes on for days and days and days. Woo!
But that old creepy with the man butt hairdo.
Yeah.
Nick, why is your hand in your pants?
That's right. I was going to say handshake. Winona Ryder in this is fucking amazing.
Does an amazing job.
She very much so. She's probably the best actress in this movie.
Meanwhile.
Over Anthony Hopkins.
I mean, meanwhile.
I don't know. I was not impressed with his performance.
He's just too giddy as Van Helsing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, we cut off her head and you see him cutting meat while talking about cutting off
his head. Oh, dude. Dude, that's it. We'll get to the dinner
table manners.
Meanwhile, like, Keanu Reeves needs the seatbelt to hold on to that accent. Like, it is just going in and out. He's like, he keeps wanting to go, "Bro." And, like, you can see him, like, convulsing. He's because he even has a surfer haircut. He has that 90 kind of butt haircut.
Yeah, because Ted Logan comes through several times.
To be fair, even Keanu said, "Oh, yeah, I sucked in that movie."
Well, but it's the thing that happened with, like, even your boyfriend Channing Tatum, that, like, until they figured out he was kind of funny, they would just shove him into movies to see what happened.
Yeah.
And that's clearly what's happening with Keanu here, where he's just like, you can do Victorian drama. Like, I mean, I bet you if we looked hard enough, he played, like, Oberon in a version of, like, Midsummer Night's Dream or something.
He was
like,
actually, for that era, he actually was pretty good in My Own Private Idaho, if you've ever seen that.
He's good, like, but there he's playing an American, where he can use an American accent. Turns out, he needs an American accent, right? Like,
yeah.
Whoa.
Exactly. He's not exactly like Doctor Strange. He's not Benedict Cumberbatch, who can just flatten it all out and be an American. No.
Forsooth, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the dawn, and Juliet is the sun.
Like, I mean, come on, man. And I dig Keanu. I will watch everything he's in and be like, oh. But they cut him out of this movie. There must be 3 days worth of footage on the floor that he filmed that they're just like, where's me? I'm in this movie. No,
well,
you're not, buddy.
I think that his performance was a little too derivative, because in that scene where Dracula's sailing over and they find his coffin, that bit where Keanu just goes, "It's cans!" I don't know.
Yeah, the movie sets up a love triangle with Mina, Dracula, and Jonathan. But Jonathan, I mean, he's a decent enough person, but he's not interesting.
That's kind of the point about him. I mean, all the men except Dracula in this movie are just kind of blank slates. I mean,
yeah.
Except for, like, Van Helsing, but who's hamming it up. But, like, Cary Elwes, the Texan... any of them?
I mean, of the three men who are trying to woo Lucy, the two British ones go together. Which one's the doctor? The doctor is not
Seward.
Okay, because she marries or is engaged to the aristocrat Lord Holmeswood.
Right.
So
these are some names.
Yeah, Seward and Holmeswood blur together. I mean, the Texan is just, well, because he's an American and he has more weaponry than most people.
Do we mention that an Irishman wrote this?
I mean,
the novel,
Bram Stoker.
Bram Stoker. So, you may not know this, but he was a contemporary and personal special friend of Oscar Wilde.
Wait, are you saying there's homosexual overtones to this movie?
What?
I know.
I'm just saying, I think Coppola picked up on what was the source material clearly put forth.
Well, I mean, the scene where Dracula and Jonathan Harker meet. Yes. You're right, Charlie. That's...
Harker is shaving and he's like all in his personal space, kind of pawing at him, and Harker is, you know, trying to keep the stiff upper lip and always be polite thing.
Yes.
And he's getting felt up by a 100-year-old man.
Well, also we have, you know, again, subtle lesbianism between the women.
Yes.
All the time. All the time.
Lucy and Mina are just all over each other.
Charlie, we derailed you 100%. Why don't you take us through the plot? Because, again, he's too modest to host, but this is your movie here.
Okay. So, you know, the actual Dracula story, what is set up before the story begins is that there was originally someone went to Dracula's home, mm-hmm. Dracula's castle, and tried to work with him, but came back broken. And that is Renfield.
Yes.
Played
by Tom Waits.
It was fun. It was great.
He looks like a skinny happy. Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Like, there were moments, yes. That happens in the backstory. It comes important later. They send over Jonathan. He's dealing with the old, decrepit Dracula. You get introduced to this idea, and you see things going back and forth. Life is going on in England. Life is going on in Transylvania. And basically, Dracula, well, it's all about him moving to England. That's the whole thing. He's buying up all this land and everything else.
This week on Flip My Abbey.
Exactly. So he comes to England and immediately gets it on with Lucy.
And in a wolf form, no less.
Yes. Yep.
Dude,
that happens.
Scene right out of Greek literature.
Yes. And of course, this is after the three suitors have fought and two have lost.
That's right. And who are those other two?
Well, of course, Seward and the Texan, Quincy Morris. They both lost a chance to marry Lucy. Mm-hmm. So basically, she's being turned into a vampire right before her wedding. It's very sad. She dies. You've got Van Helsing coming in saying, but wait, she's not dead. And they discover that. They go to kill her. They realize Dracula's a monster. He's also doing the same thing to Mina. Mm-hmm. And so now they basically have to save Mina. And the only way to save Mina is to go kill Dracula.
Yep.
And meanwhile, like the second fifth of the movie is Dracula is wooing Mina while her fiancé is kept locked up in his castle being molested by the vampire brides.
Whoa!
Yes. Well, and that's the part where it does depart from the book. In the book, you know, Mina was just next on the list and to sate his hunger. Whereas in the movie, it's the...
She's the reincarnated version of the wife that committed suicide after she found out Dracula was supposedly dead.
Exactly.
By the way, one other thing, Charlie, I'm looking on the wiki here.
Uh-huh.
Bram Stoker and Oscar Wilde knew each other, but they weren't special friends.
I don't think that's the complete story.
Well, apparently he married the woman that Oscar Wilde had been hitting on in college.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm going to explain a basic concept called a beard. Now, because Oscar Wilde was also married for a while, too.
Yes.
And I don't think there's any question about his sexuality.
Exactly. I mean, it's basically been established that Bram Stoker was very likely closet homosexual, okay? Mm-hmm. And when he wrote this novel, that was actually when Oscar Wilde was on trial.
Yeah.
Okay? So you've got that weighing upon it. And it's clear here because Dracula is basically there to sexually dominate everyone.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Yeah, homeboy swings both ways, it seems.
He's dominating over the men and the women. He is clearly establishing himself.
Well, and in an
era, that's a metaphor.
Well, and it's an era of Freudian psychology here, and it's kind of this idea of like, there's a lot of Oedipal stuff going on. Like, it's highly sexualized, and the idea of sexual dominance being kind of a repressed urge, which, being English, has been driven out of them. Sexuality, so he is rustic, he is European, he is very continental, and therefore the foreign threat.
Yeah, and it seems like everyone in this movie is a lot hornier than they were in the book. Like Mina, for example.
Oh, that's not true at
all. I mean, it is a pretty
all.
Horny book.
Well, yeah.
But I'm going to agree with Matt for one thing here, in that, I mean, have you seen Gary Oldman? I mean, shit, Commissioner Gordon.
Well, I mean,
you can arrest me.
The brides are in the book, and they do the same thing in this that they do in the movie, which is like try and literally eat Jonathan Harker before Dracula calls them off.
Right. I mean, they're tearing him apart. I mean, it's also there's several very sexual scenes, but that's a very sexual scene here.
Mm-hmm. Especially given where one of them bites him.
I mean,
well, yeah.
I mean, it's not exactly subtle oral sex, but we're there. I don't know. So how do you want to take this one apart? Again, I think most people know the plot. It's the same plot as every Dracula movie.
I think the way to do this is just how they stylistically they changed it from other adaptations, like the one with Bela Lugosi back in the 30s. Because, again, it's the same plot, but here they just...
Dracula dead and loving it.
They went a little over the top when it came to the special effects, because first and foremost, everything was done in camera, which on the one hand sounds impressive that they didn't use CGI, but on the other hand, the result just kind of is just overdone.
There are a lot of matte shots, like the Transylvania, they're all matte shots because they all look hazy and still.
I'll tell you what my favorite version of the Dracula story is, and that's Werner Herzog's remake of Nosferatu, which the whole thing of Nosferatu is it's supposed to be Dracula, they just didn't have the rights, so they changed the name. And that movie is shot, it's really dark. There are long scenes of like Jonathan Harker climbing the mountain to get to Dracula's castle. Yeah. There are some great scenes of just empty streets filled with plague-infected rats. It's kind of ugly, but at the same time, it's kind of profound. But in this case...
filmed on location in New Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. No, it kind of was. But in this case, this just... It's like they're trying to make this giant Broadway play.
Well, I mean, I said this before, but Coppola's going to Coppola. You know, he's really going overboard with the practical effects, and it does cause it's sort of this classic feel, this this artistic, beautiful European 1970s, 1980s feel to it.
Well, again, though, I mean. Nosferatu came out in 79, I think. So, I mean, why not just go to the source?
But I think most people don't really... Your average person doesn't connect with that version of Nosferatu.
Well, I mean, and we need to get into what this movie's trying to do here. Because, like, if you've ever seen an adaptation of Little Women or Emma, like, that's what this looks like, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not dissing that because this is a Victorian novel. Like, you know, we are kind of corrupted, in, at least I was, I'll admit, to the Universal horror movies, mm-hmm. right? Where they're over the top, they're dark. I mean, hell, even Twilight Zone-y is kind of the way you put it. This is in that 90s feel of, like, we're going to redo Little Women for the 400th time, or Jane Eyre, or whatever, which is fine. Every so often you need a Bronte sister movie to fill out your run. But that's what this is, and I'll be blunt. I fell asleep during this like I always do, but like your dad, I woke up confused and pretending I knew what was going on.
Yeah, I've remarked this movie actually put you to sleep.
It did. I was seduced by Gary Oldman. And I woke up a refreshed young man.
You know what this movie looks like, really? The biggest thing I can compare it to is the Martin Scorsese movie, Age of Innocence, that came out like 2 years later.
I don't know that one.
That's also got Winona Ryder in it and Daniel Day-Lewis.
Well, I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. It just, first of all, hire English actors if you want an English accent.
Yeah.
But secondly, it's just a slow movie. And I'm not insulting it. It's just that's the way it feels. It's 2 hours and 10 minutes, and it just plods along.
Well, it's the type of thing that I would expect to have seen on like BBC, but not really on, you know, screens everywhere. It's a period piece. It's a period piece with a lot of sex thrown in.
It's a masterpiece theater, practically, if there wasn't all those beheadings.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. It just... if you're a Patreon member, you will see we did Van Helsing, and that's the other extreme. It's just like, we need to make an action hero, this motherfucker. No, you don't. Like, he, and I will say, Anthony Hopkins is a weird at times, But he's what I picture the character to be. Like, he's not, he's confident. He's not brave. He's confident. And people look to him because he has knowledge.
Yeah, he's old, cantankerous. He's saying awkward things at awkward times.
Yeah.
And basically announcing to the audience the conclusions they should come to.
Yeah, exactly. And he, like, my favorite is the scene Matt was talking about earlier where they're eating like a giant roast beast. And he goes, excuse the question, because Winona Ryder's right there. He goes, when you were with those women, did you suck any of their bloods? And he's like drinking just a stein of red wine. He's like, see if she likes being cuckolded. Let's see how this is going to go. Like, it's really intense. He's like, you know that time you were in bed with four other women? Yeah, they're pretty hot. One of them was Monica Bellucci. How's that make you feel?
Yeah, and he calls it infidelity.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
I mean, the more you think about it,
right there. But the thing is, she knows at this point that she's totally down to pound with a Dracula. So she's like, oh, my husband, my goodness. Like, I mean, that's something. That is a lot of fun they're having. Yeah. But yeah.
So. Yeah, we've mentioned Anthony Hopkins as Van Helsing in this. And considering we've done Van Helsing for the Patreon, I mean, it's just so weird thinking about how they looked at that character and decided, yep, you know what? Action hero.
Well, and I will say, I hate it because people like Victor Frankenstein and Van Helsing, to me, are great characters. Why? Because professors never get to be heroes, right? And like, and that's the way
Indiana Jones would like to have a word with you.
Yeah, but he's an action hero, man. Like, the Dean is more the character that really would exist, which is like, he knows the knowledge. Like, they're cracking the stuff out. Indiana Jones is a fuckboy, right? Like, he's James Bond. James Bond doesn't need the information. Q does, right? Like, that's the way the game is played. And I don't think Anthony Hopkins can literally take on any of these guys. That's why you hire a Texan to do the shooting. Right? And that part as well. Like, they get the character dynamics down. This just doesn't feel like it moves like a movie does.
Well, no, it doesn't. It doesn't. And you mentioned this before, but it's built from an epistolary novel, you know, where it's piecing together the story from all these artifacts, you know?
But I will say that the Victorians got one thing right. Because Frankenstein is also epistolary.
Yeah.
Nothing is scarier than getting a letter. You're like, holy shit. Oh, my God. I have to read all of this?
Yeah, it's probably a bill.
It is. It's right. I mean, we can get through this. I mean, if you've seen that Treehouse of Horror with Dracula, that's exactly how Dracula looks when he's full dracking out.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
He has that butt head. He has the giant red kind of velour outfit. You know, mm-hmm. He's practically in the Starship Enterprise.
We do get some of the classic Dracula dialogue. We get the whole, the children of the night, what music they make.
That's right.
I've crossed oceans of time.
Yeah.
Immediately that shit gets wet. Like, hear him talking and they're like, Dracula? Like,
if I could turn back time.
Yeah. The credit song is just beautiful. It's sad.
It's an Annie Lennox song.
Yes.
Which, I mean, appropriate. We got this.
Also, Diamanda Galas, or however you pronounce that, does voice work in this. And I showed Charlie one of her music videos. And,
oh, yeah.
That is far scarier than Dracula.
Yeah, I will say the one thing I don't get about this movie is the tone.
Yeah.
It's all over the place. And that's where I think things like Nosferatu really hit it. Like, that tone is creepy the whole time. And this kind of bounces around a lot, mm-hmm. right? Which is neither here nor there, but we can kind of get to London, I guess, because you mentioned the beginning. Dracula sets up at a place called Carfax Alley.
Yeah. Abby.
Whatever.
Carfax Alley, the world's most dangerous homeless man.
He's in his cardboard. I was going to say, it's where you check out your used cars. He's Carfax Abbey.
You see, he rises dramatically from a cardboard box.
Yeah, there you go.
And at this point, we're introduced to everyone. Gary Oldman is Dracula, Winona Ryder as Mina, Anthony Hopkins as Van Helsing, Keanu Reeves as Jonathan Harker, Richard E. Grant as Seward, and Cary Elwes as Lord Otho Holmes.
That's right, Richard E. Grant is in this movie.
With his mustache that looks fake.
It's real, though, baby. Billy Campbell as Quincy Morris.
What happens is Dracula gets to London via a ship, and there's that whole... They try to do the thing in the novel where it's an because it's an epistolary novel, where every once in a while we'll see diary entries from like the captain, or we'll see a letter from Jonathan Harker. And in this case, you know, Dracula's being smuggled on board the ship and kills all the crew, and then the ship arrives in London.
Right.
And then that's when he starts preying on Lucy.
Well, yeah, Mina was his Mrs. Right. Lucy was his Mrs. Right Now.
Wow.
You know what?
I'll take it.
Touchdown, it Matt is there.
Quinn. And I will say, for those of you who don't know Billy Campbell, you do know Billy Campbell because he's an episode that I can guarantee will come out the next year. The Rocketeer as the Rocketeer.
No, that was him?
That's yeah, Billy Campbell. Billy Campbell.
And of course, Tom Waits as Renfield, who spends his entire time tied up and hanging from a ceiling in a straitjacket.
Did they explain in the movie like who Renfield is?
I think he was the one that went before Harker.
Did say that he went before Harker.
Well, he's explicitly Harker's boss, right? Mm-hmm. In the book. I don't think they ever established that.
I don't think they actually said that this was his boss, but they did say that he went to set this up and came back mad.
Okay.
Well, and if you haven't seen What We Do in the Shadows, he's the familiar.
Yeah.
And again, What We Do in the Shadows, he promised me he'd make me a vampire next.
Well, he ate bugs, he ate spiders, but enough about Tom Waits' personal life in the movie.
He wants to eat a cat.
That's from the book, though.
Yeah, that is from the book as well.
Tom Waits does a very good job of bringing that character to life. Very true form. But it is underutilized. I mean, if you're gonna take the departures that Coppola did, you should have like done more with Renfield. I thought.
Well, and I'm gonna go a step further. I wish more people were at Tom Waits' level because he is chewing that scenery up. Everyone else is like down here, and Waits is like pulling apart the bars, like, you promised me immortality. But like that's where I want everyone at. Yeah. Like if Winona Ryder's gonna seduce Van Helsing in that one scene, dude, don't just like shove them titties in his face, right? Like if you're gonna go over the top, because that's what this movie needs.
Yeah,
it's either going to be Little Women again, or it's going to be balls to the wall. Do something stupid with this movie.
Well, it couldn't decide if it wanted to like be a period piece or a blockbuster.
That's right. And unfortunately, it had the funding of a blockbuster and went for a period piece, so I'm sure it lost money.
It was a very big hit.
No kidding!
$250 million on a $40 million budget.
Oh, so he paid off the vineyard.
Yeah.
He
finally paid off One from the Heart, is what was going on there.
When does Jack come out? Because that also was a piece
1996.
Of shit. 1996. Ooh, so we're four years away from him burying his career again. Great. Just great.
Yes.
Oh, God help us all. Yeah, so Charlie, what should we talk about now, buddy? This is I want to make sure we do you justice here because I can dick around for an hour on this.
Okay,
movie.
Okay. So I mean, we've already established that the source material is very homoerotic, very queer in nature, if you will, and the whole metaphor of Dracula being this sexually dominating force.
Right.
He dominates the men, he dominates the women, and the cultural background of that as well.
Right.
Really, to be honest, I mean, those are the important details to note from the source material.
Right.
And I think Coppola did a fantastic job of bringing that to life. I mean, he really covered that area. He could have. I think anything can be a little bit gayer, but he could have queered it up a little bit more and not in the women's making out with women part as well.
Right.
But no, it was great. I think the challenge I've got is that this whole thing is very much style over substance. You know, you've got such beautiful scenery, some really interesting effects, the way he plays with shadows.
Right.
It's amazing. But the story that he injected, the story that he forced on top of the source material, it just wasn't moving fast enough for me.
Well, and plus, the more you think about it, the creepier it gets with the love story. You know, he kidnaps her husband. He sickens her best friend. Then he shows up to hit on her when she is clearly, quote TV tropes, absence makes the heart go yonder.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm surprised she didn't figure out she'd been set up this whole time. She's a school teacher. She's not stupid.
Well, she was under... I always assumed that it was just because she was under his spell or whatever. Yeah. It wasn't really a logical thing.
Well, and I will also say something, I guess, which is whatever. But, like, you hire some Stephen Fry, like Hugh Laurie, people who can do it, you can have actors. The problem is, like, Anthony Hopkins, Gary Oldman, Winona Ryder, they're fine. I mean, but like everyone else in the movie is struggling with their accent so hard they're not acting. Like the acting is keeping Keanu sounding like he's from Southern England. So that's why he's so toned down. You give someone who can do the accent, they can get angry. But like at one point, Jonathan Harker is thrown off a horse. The Texan pulls him up. He pulls out his gun and shoots someone. There's not a line uttered. You don't get a quip. You get nothing. It's like, We did it 4 takes. This is the one where he didn't start talking like a Californian again. Like,
what British actors from this period would have been better for Keanu Reeves?
Well, but that's the thing.
Because they already have Cary Elles.
Well, but the problem is they're trying to get blockbuster stars.
Yeah.
If you're going to spend the money, spend it on the effects. Get smaller English actors. You already have Winona Ryder, Anthony Hopkins, and Gary Oldman. Those are the names you need. Tell everyone else
This the first movie Anthony Hopkins did after Silence of the Lambs?
Yeah.
This era, all the great British actors, Americans only knew them in American roles. Okay? Like, they'd never heard of Anthony Hopkins with anything but an American accent. They didn't care. So there wasn't really...
Anthony Hopkins was in The Elephant Man, where he's using his natural voice. That was a Best Picture nominee back in the day.
We should have invited Sir Sean out here as Van Helsing.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, you know, Roger, who would have been the Texan? Get someone to up the American accent for the Texan, too, because even he's kind of muted.
Well, you said...
Someone from Dallas?
Frankly, I think Hugh Laurie would have been great in this movie.
Well, and Fry Laurie was on TV at the time.
Yeah.
So, like, he's around. But again, like, to me, Winona's great. Who was the woman who played Lucy?
Anyone? Sadie Frost, and she was just mad.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sadie Frost was in this.
Yeah, but at the time, hadn't she not been in much?
No.
I don't think so. I don't know.
Yeah, I think she was sort of, this was sort of her breakout or introduction, if you will.
I think it even says the credits, introducing Sadie Frost.
Yeah, you know, actually, I think you're right.
At least the Python actor didn't end up in this. Like, this seems like the kind of thing that, like, Eric Idle could have just stumbled into.
Oh, Eric Idle's Renfield would have been interesting.
Yeah, but again, that takes a role away from someone who nailed it. So,
yeah, exactly.
That's the fear.
No, the Python guys are all like in their 40s. They couldn't play Keanu.
They were much older than that.
Well,
point.
I mean, but like that's the problem. They could have accidentally stumbled into one of these roles. Like, you know, you could have had Van Helsing played by John Cleese, and that would have ruined the part.
You git Dracula, you putz! Why won't you stay dead?
That's going to be edited very heavily.
I'm sure it will, but that's... you can only do John Cleese loud. I'm sorry.
That's true. Unless you're doing a funny walk.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Ah, damn it. Even Cumberbatch is too young for this.
Yeah, yeah.
Cumberbatch would have worked as Harker. He looks like him.
You know.
So he looks like Keanu a little bit.
Maybe not as Jonathan Harker, but you know what English actor would have worked in this movie? Hmm. Who was already established? Alan Rickman.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, you know who else would have been fine? Reese Ifans.
Mm.
The guy who played Kurt Connors in Amazing Spider-Man. He was in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows as Lovegood.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, and we're fixing a movie that's 30 years old, so who gives a shit? But, like, it's just, the problem is, if you want someone to be angry, it can't be Jonathan Harker, who's barely holding on to that accent. Like, the scene where they're trying to stake Lucy, and she comes in holding, like, a toddler, which is weird enough, like... Dressed like she's Pagliacci, like down to the like weird face makeup, and they like stake her and all this stuff, and Hopkins gets spattered with blood, and Jonathan Harker's like, "Whoa!" And you're just like, "Oh, thanks, Keanu.
Well,
that's your one word."
Well, the original in the scene where the brides are feeding on him, and Dracula gives him a baby, he's just screaming. That part worked.
Actually, you know what? I'm actually impressed that like. Kenneth Branagh didn't end up in this movie somehow. Like, because, like, this is where he sticks his dick in, right? Like,
yeah.
This is around the same time he did that Hamlet, which was so well regarded that got Academy Award nods, right? Like, and again, he's hit or miss for me, but he would have been a good Jonathan Harker.
Yeah.
Because, this is what he would have been.
He would have been
early
a lot
30s,
younger.
Like 31, 32. He would have been young. He would have been sexy. He's a good looking dude.
Yeah. And, no, that would have worked. That would have worked really well.
Yeah. You know, him and Cary Elwes fighting over someone. And you have you could have Chris Eccleston as one of them too. Like that's how you fix that.
Yeah. A better cast that native British speakers would have probably been a better choice.
I love how you
said.
You know
who Lucy could have been?
Who?
Gillian Anderson. Yeah. She's actually English.
I love how we're talking about what English actors from the early 90s did we all have crushes on?
I mean, really? Like,
I mean,
Samantha Bond, Helena Bonham Carter? How did she not end up in this?
Oh, how is she not Lucy?
Or one of the brides, even. Although, tragically, when you get her and Braun out together, things go on.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And then Tim Burton shows up and ruins everything. Just ruins it all. God help us. Did you know that he has a butthead in this movie?
Are we talking about Tim Burton or
Dracula?
Yes.
Dracul.
Yes, he has one of the most elaborate beehives ever committed to screen.
And again, like, if you've seen any Dracula interpretation...
That's kind of the thing. I mean, this is just... It's the same plot, basically. So, you know, at this point, the novel's what? 123 years old, I think?
Yep.
So
spoilers for a book in public domain.
Exactly. So everybody knows the story, and they know how it ends. Like, Dracula still gets killed.
Right, exactly. And Hugh Grant and Rupert Graves go in with Vinnie Jones, and they end up cutting off his head.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then, of course, at the end, I believe Mina's devastated because...
at this point, she's fully in love with Dracula.
Yeah, at that point. But other than that, it's just the same sort of thing. All we're talking about really is stylistic differences. And I think we all agree that there was too much of this that was just over the top unnecessarily.
But if we're talking about style, the style of this movie is fucking gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely.
The costumes look great.
Won an Academy Award for best costume.
Yeah, and this is something I've seen people talking about, but I don't know myself. I'm not an expert in Victorian fashion, but someone said that Mina's clothes are always a little bit out of style, and so that might be Lucy's hand-me-downs, because Lucy's the rich one.
Right.
And so if they did that, that is a lot of attention to detail.
Well, and things like Renfield's clothes are mis-sized, and like Richard Harker's young money, so he has cheap clothes that fit well. Like, mm-hmm. They do a great job. Anthony Hopkins as Van Helsing is dressed like a proper gentleman, mm-hmm. but he's dressed differently because he's Dutch and not English. Like...
Even Dracula's costumes are great, like how he starts out with very antiquated clothing and then ends up in what would have then been considered, frankly, would have now be considered a pretty modern suit.
Yes. Well,
yeah, he put all his money in the Bank of Bucharest 400 years ago, and it's been accumulating interest for several centuries.
It's that plot from that Futurama episode.
Ah, yes.
But yeah, no, it looks good, and you poked at the matte paintings, but I would take that over CGI any day of the week. It sometimes gets shitty, like when they go back to Romagna, and at one point Mina Harker is able to control the weather via like blue circles.
That was weird.
There's a scene where he gets her to drink his blood. He's like, "I give you a power over storms and beasts," or something like that. So she gets way into the whole. Goes beyond. I'm torn between two dudes here. This is I am turning into a sorceress.
She gets that power by sucking his man titties, which is a really erotic scene.
Oh yeah, that I mean, bit. It's the Anne Rice thing where a vampire has to suck your blood and then you have to suck its blood, and that's how you become a vampire.
And it is. I mean, again, it's an erotic scene, and when Gary Oldman doesn't have the makeup on, he's a good looking dude, and it's Winona Ryder, and she's at this point the young hot actress. Like, I mean. Hell, she still looks good in Stranger Things, but at this point she's, what, probably 23, 24?
Yeah. Something like that.
And, I mean, it's a hot scene.
Well, it's an important distinction scene because it's one of the ones where he's being coy and trying to say, no, I can't do this with you. I can't send you down this road. And then she turns the tables and becomes a little bit dominant. And so in bed they become equals, if you will.
So who would have been hotter in the scene, Gary Oldman or Ralph Fiennes? Because they could have both done it.
I'm looking at you, Charlie.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, total Sophie's choice.
I mean, you're right.
Ralph Fiennes, I'm sorry. I've got a thing for him.
I've actually got another...
I will say he does have a more, how do I put this, defined face. Like, in a lineup, you could pick it. It's distinguished features.
Yeah, he's got sharp edges. Gary Oldman doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, Colin Firth is right up there, too. I just don't think he could pull this off. He's too Irish.
No. Now, I've got a question for Charlie as the vampire expert.
Yes.
From what I remember about the book, Dracula was not a romantic figure. Like, the characters mocked him all the time for, like, wearing weird clothes or, like, being a really awkward, out-of-date nerd.
He was not suave in the book.
Right.
But he exerted his dominance.
But that sounds a little different than what they do in this movie, where he is treated as, like, this ultimate people's sexiest man alive, yeah, basically. Because, well,
when did the vampire sex gods trope come around?
Yeah.
Well, it's right around when Mark Strong was seducing Catherine Zeta-Jones. And so I'm just keep mentioning British actors.
Because Interview with the Vampire had that, and this has it. Was there any vampire sex god stuff earlier?
Well,
Nick, you have some interesting tastes.
Early vampire novel, Carmilla.
Oh, that one.
Sets up a very strong erotic element. And the whole concept, even the book, Dracula, as I've said before, I mean, it's very erotic in that it's all about dominance. It's not about, I'm going to woo you or romance you. I'm going to take you.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to run into you in the street until you love me.
Yes.
Want to pet my wolf.
Pet my wolf. Oh,
that's what he. That's how he gets it to work. I mean, he's about to bite her, and then the wolf shows up and he tries to the smoother approach.
Yes.
Look at my wolf. I'm petting the wolf. Do you want the pet wolf?
Well, I mean, we can get. I mean, we're mostly through this. The third act is when they introduce decapitations, which goes on and on and on and on.
I was surprised about the amount of blood used in this. I didn't think Coppola would go there, but. There you go.
It's Coppola. I mean, he's not afraid.
But no, but even still, like, I don't know what this was rated at the time. I guess I could look.
Oh, it's R.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
But, like, for the first, it's a stitch over 2 hours. For the first hour, you could argue it could be a PG-13 movie. Like, there's nothing about it. And then, starting with them finally staking Lucy when she comes back, like, again, Pagliacci with a child, she spits blood in his face. After that, there's probably 10 beheadings? Like, it is something to write home about.
When Dracula senses Mina marrying Harker in Romania, and he just totally loses his cookies and chows down on Lucy,
he does.
It gets bloody.
Yeah.
It does. And then, like, and then the rest of it turns very body horror. Like, when they're at Romania at one point, I already mentioned, Mina tries to seduce Van Helsing, and he puts a communion host to her head, and it burns in like it's fucking Home Alone.
Yeah. Like, well, that was in the book too, I remember. But in the book, Mina was horrified about that.
Well fair. Like, she reaches up shakily and touches it, and it burns the imprint of the host into her forehead. Like, there's a half a cross. And I will say one thing that they do very well in here is the use of fire. Like, when Lucy goes down the stairs, the candles light themselves. At one point, Van Helsing stuffs a crucifix in the face of Dracula, and it bursts into flames. Like, this falls in the camp for me of The Exorcist, wherein, like, again, you have to, like, full-on, whole-hog believe in Catholicism just for the fantasy elements. And if you do that, this movie becomes creepy. Like, there is something about transubstantiation that works, and therefore this blood, this wine is the blood of Christ, and how... Curse you! Well, like, that's cool.
Literally at the start, that's how Dracula turned into Dracula, was because he stabbed a cross and blood came out and he drank it.
And there you go. And then when spoiler at the end, he dies. But he dies at the foot of almost the exact same cross.
Yes. Well, and the cross heals itself.
It does. Which is, again, you don't have to believe in Catholicism to appreciate the metaphor at play here. Which is why The Exorcist worked. For a second... Satan is real, and goddamn it, he wants your soul!
Well, I mean, Coppola and Scorsese both are... they're Italian Catholics.
Would you say that? You mean a guy named Scorsese is Italian?
Well, I had a thought here that this is actually I'm giving him the finger.
Oh,
this is
for the audience.
This is, I had a thought, this is actually kind of Calvinist, you know, that he's a Dracula, might have been predestined for salvation, but he keeps rebelling and cursing God, so I'll keep you alive for 400 freaking years if I have to.
I will say, could you say then, Matt, that this is a battle between Protestantism and Catholicism being written by an Englishman
who lives in Ireland?
Continental Europeans?
An Englishman who lives in Ireland, too.
Right? I'm saying, like, that's what it is, because what's the whole part of Protestantism, other than to strip away those iconography, and the Catholics are like, I have the host, and it literally works, right? This is a man who believes in the miracles, so much so that it can cast demons out, right?
Being a person from Dublin talking about Protestantism in the United Kingdom, I'm sure he had thoughts.
Right, and again, you don't have to believe this shit, but if you do,
That's how this movie works. It's I love the idea of the battle of good and evil. Even that shitty, speaking of Keanu, that Constantine movie.
Oof.
Which again, that's a stay tuned and a half, Bobby. But you watch that, and the idea that he's smoking a cigarette in front of the devil and just like practically puts it out on that old man's chest, that's funny.
And I will ascend into heaven while giving the devil the finger.
Oh, dude. Yeah. If you're going back, I'm going to make you live longer. And he pulls the tar out of his lung. That is a movie for another day, my friends. That is a movie for another day. Now, majestic Mr. Rose.
Yes.
Anything else you want to touch on? Because we've tap danced around this movie for a good
no,
while.
No, I mean, you know, there's nothing much to say other than, you know, it's a beautiful movie.
It is.
It's got some great effects. It won some awards for costuming, for makeup.
Sound
which, editing?
Because now I know that when you suck someone's blood, it sounds like you're biting into an apple.
Yep.
Like, so I told him before, so don't think I'm springing this on him now. So if he has no answer, it's on him. But, Mr. Rose, can you recommend for the Vampire Impaired a few flicks to get them into it?
So, this is where I'm going to differ from Daniel. I'm going to say the original 1922 Nosferatu.
Oh, that's a great movie.
That should be your go-to for just getting your foundation, right. Okay? I'm going to go with probably, it's between The Hunger or Near Dark for my 80s.
Near Dark. Okay. Do that one.
Both are good.
Both are solid. Yeah. But, you know, okay, Near Dark. So Nosferatu, Near Dark. Let the Right One In.
Good one.
And then I'm going to add as a special recommendation.
Yeah.
What We Do in the Shadows.
Perfect. Mm. No criticism here.
Yes.
Great pick. I will say that the movies we did this month, From Dusk Till Dawn, is solid.
Yep.
I will say this one is good, but expect Victorian cup of tea, not action movie.
Oh, yeah.
And you shouldn't expect, and I will say Dracula Den Loving It is atrocious, except for the scene where they stab Lucy and it's a bloodbath with Steven Weber. That is one of the funniest things that's ever been put to celluloid.
Well, there are lots of gems when it comes to good horror movies or hilarious movies for vampires.
What
Buffy,
do you think?
The original movie. Buffy.
The original Buffy is a solid pick.
Solid.
What do you think of Only Lovers Left Alive?
Great movie. I strongly recommend it. Decent vampire movie. Great romance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I thought about doing that one, but I thought that it was probably, there were better choices, you know?
No, it's fair. And the problem is vampire means very different things. Because again, a Buffy vampire looks almost nothing like these vampires.
Oh yeah.
But the Buffy vampire is a lot of fun. Like, I also kind of like, Abel Ferreira's movie, The Addiction. That one's good. It's just, but again, it's not the same at all.
Charlie did mention The Hunger, which is a great vampire movie.
It's got
David Bowie in it as a vampire, and there's a sex scene with Susan Sarandon and Catherine Deneuve in it.
Even I love that.
I mean, it's hot.
How about
Catherine Deneuve? If you want something fun, Blackula is fun as shit.
Oh, yeah.
Dracula 2000, not as fun, but still silly as shit.
Well, I'm a big fan of Eddie Murphy, Vampire in Brooklyn, you know?
Sure.
How about Lost Boys? That has a good soundtrack.
Lost Boys is great.
Lost Boys is also good. I mean,
it's got some interesting elements, but I feel that's a little lacking.
Yeah, I mean, the ones I gave are pretty much your top tier, your top five, in my opinion. There's a lot of good options after that.
I will say, too, I love Nosferatu, the original. I mean, and the remake, but the original. Don't let the black and white scare you off.
Yeah.
Because, like, I know a lot of us are, like, so used to color that when you see a black and white movie, you're kind of like, no, Nosferatu holds up.
Although, if you are interested in Nosferatu, but are needing stepping stone before then, Shadow of a Vampire, which has got Willem Dafoe and John Malkovich in it, and it's a fictional version of the making of that movie where Max Schreck actually is a vampire. It's one of the most underrated movies out there.
No, also great movie. I agree.
And avoid Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter like the plague for a lot of reasons. Most importantly, you don't need to make Lincoln cooler. But second of all, it's nonsense. It's just gray nonsense. I will also toss out
You might need to help me here for a second, Sudsy, because my wife will hate me if I don't mention this.
No, no, no. You need to do top three worst vampire movies.
Ooh. Well, we've done them. Blade yeah, that's 3, fun. Twilight, Van Helsing. That's three
there you
movies.
Go.
I will also toss out the first two Blade movies are excellent.
Yes.
Underworld.
Underworld is classic. It's if you want adventure and fun, Underworld.
That's what Van Helsing should have been, is Underworld.
Yes.
What is the one I need help with, Sudsy, though, is what is the one that is... It was Tim Burton, Johnny Depp, and it's like based on an old...
Dark Shadows.
Dark Shadows.
Yeah, saw that.
Yeah, my wife thought it was funny. Like, I have nothing wrong with that movie. I don't think it's great. I think it's a good comedy, though. If you want a comedy, you watch What We Do with
That Shadows. That has one of the most tasteless jokes I've ever seen in a movie.
The one
Dark
where,
Shadows.
Where Barnabas Collins is smoking weed.
Tiny no. Lady. Yes.
That one.
Yes, yes.
Where he's watching Karen Carpenter on TV, and then... tears out the back and it's like, reveal yourself, tiny songstress. It's like, that woman died of anorexia, you dick.
I will say, if I had to give a top five, it's Nosferatu, Let the Right One In, What We Do in the Shadow, Interview with a Vampire, and Lost Boys.
Nice.
I will say 1932's Vampyr is pretty good. Yeah. But yeah. Unfortunately, unless you have Criterion Channel, that one's hard to find, which I guess is now HBO Max. But if you have HBO Max, I'm sure it's there. I also like the Bela Lugosi Dracula. At that point, I'd almost say if you're not in that mood, watch Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, because Dracula shows up there, and then you're having a Scooby-Doo good time.
It's Bela Lugosi as Dracula.
Yes,
they all show back up. I think the Wolfman also shows up in that. Like, it's been a while, but that's a fun one. But we're here for this reason. I'm going to go Daniel, Matt, and then you. Would you recommend this movie?
I think there are better adaptations of Dracula, but that doesn't mean this is bad. We've seen bad adaptations of Dracula. Twilight. I mean, yeah. This is certainly a gorgeous movie to look at. You can tell that Francis Ford Coppola is very talented. Overall, though, if you've never read the book, this is a great way to actually find out what it's about, especially if you've just learned about the character and pop culture.
Good. Matt?
This movie is beautiful, but it's very dull, which I first saw this when I was in high school, and I remember it being much better than it was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, watch it, but remember there's a fast-forward button.
Charlie?
So, I'm going to summarize it with this. If I was a teacher and teaching this, I would use this movie to go along afterwards to really show how these themes came to life. Okay, it's a great, it's true to the source material in the concept of the motifs and the themes, right, which is important to me. But you're right, it's a little bit boring. I don't like the love story they tacked onto it. But yeah, it's worth it. If you're a fan of the source material, it's worth it to watch it.
I will say, I've never seen a movie more deserving of the 55% or 60% it has on Rotten Tomatoes, because it is clearly divisive. If you like the classic text, this is pretty good. If you want a Dracula movie that's scary or intense, it's not here. I thought it was fine. I really did. I don't hate it, right? But like, to me, I will disagree with Daniel on one point. If you haven't read the material before, I'd almost say, like, there's probably a BBC audio book that would be better, because the voices here get muddled because they cut out characters to make to put up the actors. Is this bad? No, I agree with all you. This is, you know, a solid kind of B-. And so I'd probably revisit this again if I feel that itch. But I just don't know what that itch is. That's the problem. But thank you, everyone, for indulging us in a vampire month. It's been a while since we've had a theme month. I know Matt really likes when we do theme months. We're stepping away to do, for November, just kind of fleshing out some fun nonsense. We're going to do, obviously, our bonus episode for November is going to be Baby's Day Out. We're going to do Plane, Trains, and Automobiles, some John Hughes stuff.
Thanksgiving movie right there.
That's a perfect Thanksgiving movie. And then... all of December is going to be taken up with Harry Potter. So we're going to do Harry Potter every week that long month. And it's going to be Patreon that month. And it's going to be Patreon into January and February as well. And then back to original content, little different content. So if you're listening to Patreon, thanks. If you're not, at this point, we not only have extra episodes every month, We have an extra mission briefing episode every other month as well, including the 39 steps, which is going to be there soon. And further, we're doing commentary tracks for pay with Cineprov, including at this point Batman Forever, Outbreak, which seemed appropriate for no reason, and because this is coming out when it comes out, in honor of the death of Sir Sean Connery, it's going to be You Only Live Twice.
We've also done a previous commentary for Attack of the Clones, and we're going to do one, I think, for Star Trek IV.
Not four, Star Trek V, when Kirk beats God.
And you also get how I would have done several movies, because anyone can complain. Coming up with constructive solutions to problems is good.
That's good. And so every month we hand out one of Matt's, well, our myopia prescription, and one of Matt's how I would have done it. So thanks for listening. Thanks for participating. Thanks for reviewing us and following us on social media, including Twitter, Facebook, and Letterboxd. Mr. Rose, thanks for helping us curate this month, and thanks, guys.
Myopia Movies is a product of Dude Letter Podcasting and is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Daniel Suttis, mixed and engineered by Nick Hoffman, produced by Nick Hoffman, Matthew Quinn, and Daniel Suttis, and our panelist is Jeremy Reigel. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod and is used under the Creative Commons 4 license. Find it at incomptech.com. Please follow us on Facebook, at Twitter at Myopia Podcast, on Letterboxd, and rate and review us wherever you find us. Thanks.